If you're listening to this podcast, there's a really high chance that you are also interested in cookbooks. So I wanted to let you guys know that my cookbook, Elevated Everyday Paleo, is officially out wherever you get your books from. It's a collection of recipes that I believe make everyday cooking just a bit more special, and I hope it reminds you that there's art in so many little moments of life. You can grab it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookseller. Hi, I'm Mariah Sautel, and you're listening to Manual Mode, a podcast for optimistic and goal-oriented creative entrepreneurs. Today, I'm talking with Jenny Bravo, a Portland-based food photographer, prop curator, studio owner, trained chef, certified health coach, and mom of two. Jen's work seamlessly weaves between drool-worthy styled food, clever product shots, and images that show greater brand stories, such as a recent series she photographed for Luke's Lobster. As if that all wasn't enough, we're here to talk about income diversification for food photographers because Jenny also has a stunning pottery line with Campfire Pottery. It's safe to say this girl can do it all, and I'm hoping that this conversation will let me absorb just a bit of her superpowers through osmosis. I'll keep you posted on that. All right, Jen. So today you're a full-time creative entrepreneur, and I know you have your studio and all of these things, but you have so many titles that I'm sure it's been quite the trip going from wherever you started to now. So can you start me kind of from the beginning and walk me through how you got to where you are now?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for such a beautiful introduction. I feel like I need to like write that down and like relish in how lovely that was. Thank you. I've had kind of a really interesting path to where I am today. And in hindsight, it all makes perfect sense. But when I was walking it, I sure didn't know where it was going. So, you know, I'll share my story, but I hope that most people understand that, you know, whatever path you're walking on, it's probably just right for you. I'll back you way up and I'll try to kind of make it a little bit more brief, but tell you the full story. So I've always loved cookbooks. Specifically, I say cookbooks because when I was little, I thought I wanted to be in food. I had all these cookbooks. I would tab them with like those little post-it, kind of like sticky tabs that you can use to separate pages. And I would put little like notes in them. And I was really curious about cookbooks specifically. And then I started getting really into watching Food Network shows, and I loved the feelings that I felt while watching the shows. It wasn't necessarily about the food itself. It was more about the experience on all fronts, both on the cookbooks and the shows. And I only had that cognizant like definition in hindsight. At the time, I had no idea why I was so drawn to it. I just thought it was food. So I wanted to go to culinary school because I thought, oh, it's just about the food. And my parents put a hard no on that. And so they're like, you have to go to undergrad. You know, they're all very business oriented. And that's like their clear path to success in their mind's eye. I don't necessarily agree with that now, but I followed suit. So I didn't end up going to culinary school after high school. I ended up going to undergrad and I studied marketing and business in Chicago. And then from there, I actually had an internship at Food Network magazine. And I absolutely loved it, but it was in ad sales. It wasn't really in food. So I found myself at a crossroads because when I was ready to graduate, I had this opportunity to do their executive advancement program or go to culinary school. And I had created these two very distinct options for myself. And it was a highly competitive program through Hearst, which is the magazine's kind of like big kind of owner. And it's super competitive. I made it through all the interviews and they only accepted 3 people and I was number 4. So I just missed it and I didn't have the opportunity to go and even like make the decision for myself. So it kind of put me back onto this culinary school path just because the option was made, the choice was made for me. So I ended up moving to New York, going to this culinary school that was very health centric. And so in that we learned nutrition, we learned culinary techniques. And so at this point in my life, I was more interested in the nutrition part. I thought, oh, maybe this is where my stake in the ground and food will be is health. So I followed that path for a little while. I private chefed in New York City. I got really burnt out doing that. And in hindsight, that's because it's not meant for me. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing. At the time, I just thought, shoot, like I'm burnt out. This isn't good. It's me, you know, and I put all that burden on my lap, which was a mistake. Now, in all that time in college, my best girlfriends pooled together because I started a food blog, and it was before Instagram. Facebook was there, but it wasn't really used for business yet. And so food blogs was kind of the place to go to create food content. And I was just totally captivated by it. So all my girlfriends pulled together and bought me a birthday present of a Nikon entry, like D whatever camera. And it was so sweet and it was amazing. I took a couple photos, I posted to my blog, and it was great. And I tried to keep it along as much as I could, but I never really understood that was a business strategy. I thought it was more of a passion project. And I thought all these big name bloggers, you know, they're there, that's what they're doing, and they're in a different category. And there's no clear path from point A to point B. So I kind of gave up on that. And so then moved into nutrition, blah, 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 got myself to culinary school, and then got burnt out and moved with my now husband to Portland. And I had another kind of fork in the road moment where I had the choice to go and work as a culinary manager for a catering company or scratch that altogether and go work for retail, which in high school, during my high school summers, I always worked in small business retail, whether it was like a consignment boutique or some home decor stores. And so I said, you know what, I need a chance to just reset. And so I ended up picking the retail, which was actually bridal gown sales. And it was like a similar time in my life where I was just like about to be engaged. I knew that those people were my similar age. I was moving to a new city. I wanted a chance to meet people. What better way than to meet 10 brides a day? You know, there's an opportunity to meet some people. So it was the best choice for me in that moment. It was very obviously not a forever choice, but it was a means to an end. So I did that for a couple of years and then moved over to home decor retail again, where that job is what really set in motion the career that I'm at right now. And that's because through some of those connections, I made some great friends and some great creative networking opportunities came my way. So then my friend Kristen of Campfire Pottery, who I now have a collab with, she and I we met around that time, and she said, you know, Jen, I know you're super talented with food. I know you've put away your knives. Would you be interested in helping me create some recipes and style some food for an upcoming editorial shoot that I have? And I said, what the heck? Yes. I was starting to get really antsy and ready to return to my roots and figure out exactly what it was about food and the creative role that was calling me so heavily and intensely. So we did this thing. I created a bunch of recipes for her, styled them on this photo shoot. And that was my first ever experience on a production floor to do any type of editorial work or production work, advertising work. Like that was the very first experience I had with that. And I loved it. And I like totally caught the bug. It was fantastic. And in that shoot, another friend of mine who's a photographer was like, Jen, you don't ever show your face in your Instagram. You really should like be more personable and get in there. Let me come and take your photo and get some photos and some content for Instagram. So that's when the shift started happening from Instagram being a personal use for me to a business resource. And then that same friend and I became really close and she started to teach me photography. So now I've started to bring my camera back in, and I decided, okay, I'm going to try this food blog thing again so that I can create these recipes and share them and have imagery that keeps people excited and interested. And so that was when that aha moment came for me, where I said, you know what? I knew that there was something calling me to this industry, and I knew food production wasn't it. I was very clearly not meant for that. And that's when that hindsight really came into clearer focus for me, because I was able to say, oh, wow, I really didn't realize how much of a world there is. Even with my internship at Food Network Magazine, I didn't really get any clear insight to the production team, because that wasn't in our offices.
Right.
And so that was the moment when I said, wow, this is why I've been called to cookbooks and food shows, because I'm really interested in the creative expression of food, but I'm not necessarily interested in preparing food for anybody other than my family. So that's kind of how it all started. And from there, I'm like the queen of networking. I love making new friends. I love like, it's just, it comes supernaturally to me. And I remember in undergrad taking a public speaking course, and one of the things that the teacher had said, the professor, was like, he told us the story about this like master networker and how he made a career out of it. And I was like, what? People make a career out of like making introductions and like making, you know, putting people together. And so it always has kind of like tucked in the back of my mind as something I resonate with. And so I love to network and I love to be a member of my community. So that all kind of came really naturally to me as I was trying to make friends in Portland. And when I moved to Portland, I didn't know a single soul. Like, I used to walk around, and if I saw somebody in a similar life stage that looked interesting, I would just go up and say hi and like try to be their friend. And while, of course, none of those friendships ever stuck, it was a good practice of getting myself outside of my comfort zone, which is so important for the work that we do now and for networking.
Wait, that's so funny to me that you're like going up to people, especially because I live in New York and I know now that you lived in New York, and like, you don't do that here.
Oh, I would have never done that in New York. Oh, that's my goodness. So funny. Yeah. Portland is like, it's a good place to do that because people are very friendly and they're super happy to like live and love Maine. So it's easy to have something in common with like the person next to you. But yeah, I mean, it was really ballsy, and it's probably something I wouldn't do now that I'm in my 30s, but when I was in my 20s, like, what the hell, why not? Right. So I did it. Like, I would go to a bar and like have dinner, like at a restaurant bar, and I would like strike up conversation with like the bartender or the people next to me. And again, like, none of those friendships or those connections stuck at all, but they certainly did set me up for feeling more comfortable, you know, putting myself out there and fostering connections that might otherwise fall flat if I didn't put the effort in. So yeah, that's kind of the story in a nutshell. And ever since then, I've just been honing my photography skills, and it's all just kind of spiraled into what it is today through these connections. And I was lucky enough to have some big brands take a chance on me early in my career, because it really did give me a little bit more confidence and a little bit more, I guess, street cred right out of the gate. And that, I think, was a really interesting turn of events. I think one of my very first clients was Whole Foods New England. So it was cool, and it was all because of networking. Right. I think I got the job because I basically convinced the marketing director to hand me his budget for the month, and I told him I'd run with it.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's what I did. And here we are.
That's awesome. So I know also from having like a mishmash of things that led to where I am, that as much as you might look back and be like, there's probably a faster way that I could have gotten here, you do pick up little pieces of business knowledge and like creativity and all of these things that lead to where you are now, that I feel like make you a better business person and give you a stronger sense of self as a creative. So are there any specific things in the different jobs that you had that you've been able to take into your new career that have been really helpful for you?
Oh my God. I've taken something from every single step of my path, and I apply it almost daily here. You know, it's tempting to say, how can I fast track? Like you were saying, like, I'm sure there was a faster way to get here. I probably could have gone to photo school. I probably could have skipped all the retail things in between. And I would have been doing this for longer. But the path really did set me up for the success that I'm experiencing here and now. Because those things that you can't really learn in school, the things that you can't really learn from sticking to one single career path your entire life, you know, those are the things that create a well-rounded person or business or whatever it could be, because you have the empathy and the experience from all these different layers that right. form this great, awesome being that is you or your brand. And I could honestly say that the biggest things that I've taken away is how to deal with clients and how to be customer service oriented.
When you're talking about working with brides, I was like, that must be a really good customer service
type of learning thing. And you really do. You learn the personalities of, like, to apply it to a client, you learn in bridal, there's the bride, there's the bridesmaids, there's the mother of the bride or whomever is close to the bride within their, you know, whatever their family unit, their love people unit is. And there's a hierarchy within that unit. And you learn in every single bridal appointment, you have to relearn the hierarchy, who's in charge here, who is the bride looking to, what's the budget, who's owning the budget, who's managing the budget. And then you speak to those people appropriately through that. And to apply that to clients for production, it's the exact same thing. Who's in charge here? Who's holding the budget? What are the specific people in charge's preferences? What are they looking for? How can I give a little bit to make them happy while still sticking a boundary of what's appropriate for me and how my business works? And yeah, bridal, you would never, ever expect to go into to learn how to deal with clients in my now business, but it absolutely applies.
Yeah, for sure. So switching a little more to kind of the creativity side of things, I feel like when I look at your images, like I can clearly see when something pops up in my feed, I'm like, oh, that's Jen, like for sure. So you have like a very clear style, but you're not repeating yourself over and over again, which I think is definitely a mark that you're in the right field and that you're a professional. So how do you stay inspired and work on kind of growing your style, but also having kind of your own unique style?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's hard to answer because I think that it changes very frequently for me.
Right.
In some ways, there's a huge benefit to having kind of an equation in your brain, right? Because it gives you a sense of place. It gives you kind of that feeling of, okay, I understand how this is going to work. Like A plus B equals C. I know I need this prop. I know I need this light. I know I need these settings, and this is going to produce this image. And then the creativity that flows between each stage is what kind of diversifies each image, of course. Like we can all kind of understand that when it comes to food photography. But the inspiration that comes, you know, you have to have that anchor of knowing this like little equation is going to work for you every single time. You have to have that anchor to then have this creative freedom to feel like you can go and take a little bit more of a chance. Cause you know, at the end of the day, you can apply these three things or whatever to bring it, reel it back in if it's not working. So I say all that because the inspiration that I find often actually, this is probably going to be a really unpopular opinion, but it actually comes from each client.
Yes.
Project. Because not often do I get to just like create for myself really anymore. And if I were, then I, you know, the inspiration would come from a totally different place. But to be really specific to the brand's wants and desires, you really do have to kind of dial in to what they're looking for and what they're hoping to achieve. And I tend to find a lot of inspiration from that, because at the end of the day, that's what I'm producing for. So, you know, there is no shame in finding inspiration from that and taking their lead, their creative direction lead, as long as you know you can always come back to your like safe equation that works for you.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's a hard one to answer because it does change quite frequently. But in terms of what we're talking about today, I would say, yeah, leaning into the brand.
Yeah. I think that makes total sense, especially, I mean, they're coming to you also because they identify with a piece of your style. So it's kind of all going in a loop. And exactly. I see like a lot of New England in your work, which I appreciate. I'm a native New Englander. So I really identify with that. And I think a lot of New England brands are coming to you. So it's really kind of them being inspired by you and kind of wanting that. And then you seeing kind of the thing in them that they were drawn to in you. So that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of fluidity between, you know, if clients coming to you because they like your style, there's a lot they defer to you, but then they're going to come with a set of parameters that they need met. And that gives you that structure, but you can also find so much freedom and creativity within boundaries and structure. If you're given way too much freedom to like create and be creative, it's almost too overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some people who disagree, but in terms of the production work that we do for clients, you know, boundaries and set parameters, I think can always set you free, as counterintuitive as that might sound.
I know Seth Godin talks a lot about like boundaries being really important. And if Seth says it, then I just agree with it. So I think there's something to that for sure.
Yeah. There's this book called The Originals. Mm-hmm. I didn't read the whole book. Because life, but I did read the first two chapters, and there was a little nugget of advice that came out of those first two chapters that I take with me all the time. And the author says, you know, the reason that Steve Jobs was successful with creating Apple wasn't because he just threw all caution to the wind and said, I'm putting all my eggs in this one basket and it has no choice but to succeed. The reason that he succeeded was because he still kept his job at Microsoft. So he still had his safety net of his 9-to-5, of his income. He knew he had his health insurance. He knew all the things that create your basic needs, that if those aren't met, your brain doesn't have space to think about anything else. So to take that and to kind of apply it to what we do, you know, having that anchor, having that safety net of that balance point can then give you the freedom to know that if it does fail, you're not going down with the ship. You have another chance to keep on trying. So yeah, that's I guess a roundabout way to answer your question, but.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. So switching again, I know that you have kind of hired at different points with working with assistants or bringing in food stylists and all of those things.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your decision-making process with not only how you hire, but how you mentally got yourself to the point where you could push yourself into that? Because I know that first time where you're like, I'm not going to do this all by myself. I'm going to bring in someone else. Like there's a lot of mental gymnastics to get there. Oh my
gosh, so right. And I think there's a lot of like not enoughness and comparison trap that you fall into, because no matter what stage you are in bringing on help, like it doesn't matter. You could be just starting out or you could be a total seasoned pro. The truth of the matter is you need help. You can't do it all alone. And to say and to think that you should be able to do it all alone is robbing yourself of the opportunity to bring on the team that will make your work even more successful. And so even if you're at the beginning stages, if you can bring on an assistant and you're too nervous to bring on an assistant because you don't think you know enough, or you won't really know what to have them do or how to even go about it, just remind yourself that the assistant is there to help you. And so you can say to them, you know, I'm new in hiring help, and here's the client, here are some of the things I want to do, here are some of my concerns that I need your help with. And then you can say, how would you be able to assist me? You know, if this is a problem I need solved, how would you solve it? And they'll tell you. And I mean, at the end of the day, everybody in this industry has been where you are. And so it's vital that you kind of get over that hurdle and you just say, okay, I'm gonna hire somebody, because that first shoot that you do with help, you will feel this immense amount of relief because you're not doing it all. You have more room to be creative and to be the lead, because all of the things that you were schlepping before or doing before are taken care of for you. And it kind of comes back to our last discussion with, you know, creating some sort of balance in your workflow, and that can be with an assistant. And in terms of hiring them, I mean, this is where networking comes in handy. I would reach out to a close bud of yours in the industry and just say, hey, I'm looking for whichever assistant you're looking for. It could be a lighting tech, it could be a grip, it could be a stylist, and just see if they can lead you and follow that path until you find somebody who's available and within your budget, and then just try it out. You don't have to hire them forever. It's just one shoot and you can see how it goes.
Yeah, I love that. I know for me too, I used to think that I enjoyed doing all the jobs. And then the second that someone came in and started doing something else, I was like, wait, I hate doing some of these jobs. What was I thinking?
I couldn't agree more. It's like almost, like I felt like in the beginning of my career, I was prideful. Like I can do all these things. I only have this amount of money. They're only paying me this much. I have no choice but to do it myself. And because that's the only thing you know when you're starting out, it's hard to think of it in any other way. But yeah, just like what you said, the second you have your first assistant, holy cow, the burden that is relieved is like, I can't even, there are no words for it. It's just such an amazing and vital pivot, I think, in somebody's career that's going from just starting out to maybe that intermediate level. Like that is going to be that big pivotal moment.
Yeah. So speaking of pivoting and growing and all that, one thing that I love that I've seen about you is that you're really good about income diversification and not having all of your eggs in one basket. And I get really nervous for some photographers and I see that they have really everything riding on one thing. So can you talk a little bit about some of the ways that you've diversified and your pottery collab and just that whole aspect of your business brain?
Yeah, absolutely. Diversifying my income has almost always been a part of my life outside of, you know, high school and college. Like the second I set out on my own, I realized I cannot put all my eggs in one basket. I have to have different income streams. And it's specifically most important, I think, for creative entrepreneurs, because there are seasons in our careers. There are times where a certain thing is going to rise to the top and that's your main focus. And then there are going to be other times where that has fallen flat and there's almost no income coming in from that. And so the more you can diversify, the more, again, coming back to that safety net, the more relaxed and at ease you're going to feel, because you know you're going to be able to pay your rent. You know you're going to be able to afford, you know, your food for the month. And having that diversification, I don't think that it pulls away from your main passion. I think it actually gives you more space to breathe on your main passion. And diversifying your income can be literally anything. And I've always just followed my gut for what it is that I am doing. Some of the things that have stuck for me is balancing my creative career of producing assets through imagery and balancing actual goods that can be sold. And I have a pretty strong tie to the retail world. Like I said earlier, I've been in small business retail for a very long time, as long as I've been working. So that comes really naturally to me. And you always know at the end of the day, if you have a good to sell, you can sell it and you can go online, you can post it on a website. And it takes a certain amount of hours and it can be available all the time. That could also, you know, apply to like selling your images. It's like stock photos. It could be anything that gives you a little bit of a break from your main creative goals so that you're making a little bit of stream. You know, every single month you make roughly $600 from this thing. And every month you maybe make $1,000 from this other thing. And you know, every month you've got $1,600 coming in and you can take whatever project you want that lands on your lap because you've got that safety net. It can be anything that you're drawn to, but just, I think it's so important to create that little safety net, that I encourage all creative entrepreneurs to do that.
Yeah. I love that. So that brings us to your studio, which I'm just in awe of. It looks amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of getting that started and building that? I'm sure that was no small task.
No, it was a big deal. And the story of the studio is It came from the seed idea that I started to notice a really huge gap in the market in Northern New England. There wasn't really a production space for small businesses. And I tend to cater, the majority of my work and the majority of my clients are small to medium-sized businesses. It does teeter on the side of large businesses, but not really, because I like to keep my production teams a little bit smaller. I just like to serve that kind of niche of small business. So I noticed there wasn't really anything. There were these huge studio spaces that you'd have to create a set every single time, which is awesome, but not a lot of small, medium businesses have the budget for that. And, you know, I'd argue we all should have, every business should have a budget for, you know, their marketing materials and their advertising, but it's just not the reality, at least not at this point in life. So I was noticing this gap there. And then, you know, there's always the option of people's homes, of Airbnbs, but that provided its own set of challenges. It's inconsistent, it's harder to find, it might not match the dates that you need. Some places just won't rent to you. So there was this kind of like sweet spot in the middle that I was like, why isn't there a production space that has a beautiful kitchen, a beautiful aesthetic that can do these big productions, but have less of that like push and pull. And these kinds of studios exist in the world. It's not a new idea. And I don't think you have to have a new idea to start something great. And so I saw a need and I followed it. And that's something I've always been good at. I'm a relatively good risk taker. And so I just surveyed some of my clients. I said, hey, I'm thinking about the studio space. You've all asked me if I know of any studios that has a beautiful kitchen and, you know, whatever. And they've all been like, we are for it. And I asked all of them, what is your sweet spot? What would you pay to rent a studio like this? And I did a little bit of research on what comparable spaces in our area, just like studios, what they were charging. And, you know, I was able to kind of create this calculation in my mind of what it needed to be in order to be successful. And another layer of this is one of my diversified income streams is that I have an online vintage store called Zion Vintage. And it's a way for me to buy and sell some of my props for food photography. And it's kind of actually become something bigger for myself. And it made a pretty good amount of money in my yearly income last year. And so it was something that I was really like, I was focused on. But I knew that I wanted all of these things at the same time, and certain things, you know, can't always have my full attention. So in November of last year, I said, I'm going to do this pop-up shop for my vintage store and just see if I want to have a retail location for my store since it's been pretty successful online. And I knew very, very intentionally going into that pop-up that it was going to be a beta tester for not only the store, but also my threshold of working in retail again. Did I want to have a retail store, or did I want to follow this instinct of fulfilling this need in our area, which is the studio? Both couldn't happen at the same time. And so I was going to give myself 6 weeks of the store to test it and see where I fell and my desires and how I wanted to move forward. The retail store was a total success, and it definitely planted the seed of desire to grow that side of my business. But I knew in the immediate now that could stay online. And what would really help my clients in Northern New England was a studio. And so I closed up the pop-up as I was intended to on January 1st and was full speed ahead in planning the studio. And I consulted with my accountant, with my sister, who's a real estate developer. I talked, obviously, very in depth with my husband, with my clients, with friends. And I just went for it and let the chips fall where they may and really just worked my ass off to get the studio off the ground in 6 months. So here we are.
That's awesome. I'm sure even beyond just, you know, they're needing a studio space in that area, just even having your own space where everything is just laid out must just be so nice.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, the big thing I kept coming back to was, if no one rents my studio, at the end of the day, the space is for me. And I already know that I have the client work to support the rent payments and the loan for the build out. And no matter what, even if I didn't make a dime in studio rentals, I would have my debt covered. So I knew it could just be for me if it needed to. And for the longest time, I was shooting out of a tiny corner in my dining room at my house that I share with my husband, my dog, and my two very little children. And so toys were falling all over the place. Gear was falling all over the place. Like, I needed to like get out of there. And so a huge desire was, of course, to fulfill that need for me. But I also knew, if I don't go into it with a business sense, if I'm not going into it with a way to say, how can this add income diversification to my life, that maybe I wasn't quite ready for a studio yet. Because even though I could afford it, you know, and I really, really wanted it, again, it comes back to diversifying income. So it took me figuring out what that meant to actually greenlight the project. But I always knew, again, that safety net, it could all come back to just being mine if it had to.
I love that. That's great. So you're doing so much, but I'm sure you have more things on the horizon. So what's next for you?
Oh, so many things. I am always trying to move forward. I always set goals for myself every year, what I hope that year looks like for my career. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be these hard and fast projects. It doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be these big risky things. This year, I do hope to also open a brick and mortar store for my business, Valiant. And it's definitely on my top list of things to do, but I'm still looking out for the perfect space. So now that we're kind of rounding out the end of 2021, doesn't look like that's going to happen for me this year. And that's totally fine. It is still a business goal of mine, but I'm going to wait until it's the perfect retail space before I jump on it. So that was 2021. And of course, the studio. And then looking forward into 2022, it's going to be really keep on looking for that space for the retail store. And I'm going to take it kind of down a notch with my photography work, not because I'm going to scale back, but because I really want to start honing in on exactly what kind of production shoots I want to be on. So I think I'm going to focus on raising my photography prices and taking on less clients. So that's what I think is in store for 2022. I say all that and I reserve the right to change my mind, as I almost always do. And we will see, but that's on the horizon for me.
That's great. All right. My last question for you. If you could have anyone dead or alive over for dinner, who would you have and what would you serve?
Oh man. Who would I have and what would I serve? I really want to think about this and be intentional, because there's tough. A million people that would be so amazing to have. I'm going to answer it twice, dead and alive.
Okay. I'll allow it.
Alive, Annie Leibovitz, because I just, even if we didn't talk shop, I just am curious about who she is behind the scenes, not on a production floor, because we all kind of have heard about her production style and these grandiose things that she does and how, you know, we've all kind of heard in the photography world about that. I want to know what she's like when she's not on. I would probably serve some yummy wine, and if she liked martinis, I would probably do martinis and see if I could get her a little drunk and a little chatty. And then dead, I would probably have my puppy, a family member. I'd have him over and I would just talk and talk and talk about life.
I love that. That's so great. This was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope our chat is useful to your listeners. I know being somebody who has started out from nothing with no real photography education, that it can be so overwhelming and scary. And especially with Instagram and blogs and all the places to consume, you know, Pinterest, to consume other people's work, it can really feel big, scary, isolating, and like a lot of not enoughness. But the thing I would say for all of that is I've been there and I know how it feels. And the best thing you can do is look at other people's images and make a choice. Are you going to compare your work to their images, or are you going to use their image as an opportunity to learn? And if you can say, am I looking at this and am I falling into the comparison trap, or am I looking at this and I'm trying to learn from it? You're going to find yourself in a completely different mindset. And it's the most helpful is to say every opportunity is a learning opportunity, and try to find a little bit of a break from consuming all the noise. You'll get there and you'll do what you want to do. It does take time, and sometimes it takes a really crazy path.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been such a pleasure. I really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Manual Mode. I hope you found that conversation with Jenny helpful. I know I did. Next week, we have yet another wonderful guest on. I can't wait for that. But in the meantime, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'm Mariah Sautel, and you've been listening to Manual Mode. Thank you.